This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Just going back to the Jeremy Carl thing a minute, because it is, you know, it's big news.
Yeah.
Just apparently,
if you just did join us, give us the news, John.
Oh, if you've just joined us, Jeremy Carl has been sacked. The show has been axed for good. It is not coming back. I think, you know, a lot of people apparently have been, you know, slamming the show and blah, blah, blah. But someone said, well, you watched it though, didn't you? You watched it. 1.5 million of you watched it.
Yeah.
You're a bit hypocrite. Hypocritical,
but like, I think it's because, like what I just said, you almost... the best part of the show is finding out the lie detector test.
Yeah, of course it is.
When he opens... What he does, he opens the envelope.
He did.
Right?
He doesn't anymore.
Right. He did, yeah. He used to open the envelope, but he would stare at you as
he opened it.
That's powerful.
Oh, yeah. It was a nasty stare. Right?
And what I...
Are you going to pass it?
Okay.
Are you going to pass it?
But what I quite like about it, right, okay. I
mean, we should do lie detectors on this show. Carry on.
I'm getting involved now. Okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I like is that when they sort of read out and they say, see, you're a liar. And then the bloke sort of slouched in his chair and go, no, I'm not. I was a bit nervous when I took it.
Yeah.
I'd had a drink the night before. As always, I mean, seriously, if you had a lie detector test and they said it's wrong and you go, there's something wrong with the machine, wouldn't you? There's something wrong with it.
I know this for a fact, that if I took a lie detector test, I'd fail it. If I was telling the truth or if I wasn't.
Yeah, because you
I know, I'm the sort of person that does.
Listen, we've got a caller. Catherine is phoning in from Westminster. She's on the line now. What's your views on this, Catherine?
Well, it's the lie detector test that was the straw that broke the camel's back, because when the... I didn't see the programme. Well, we haven't shown it. When he said to him, the lie detector... You've taken the lie detector test and it's conclusive. You are a liar. Yeah. And he wasn't a liar, and that's the reason. He wanted to prove to his long-time girlfriend that he wasn't cheating on her.
Yeah.
And the lie detector test is virtually impossible.
Well,
it's an impossible situation. It's inconclusive always, but most of them don't care because they're only on there to get into the show.
Agreed.
But I think it's dreadful. And I think it's dreadful that at the last minute he went on there to prove, and he was quite a decent bloke from what I read, and she was as well, and that he hadn't cheated on her at all.
So... In fact, I totally agree with you, like what me and Johnny were just saying.
Well, you just said that you're waiting for the lie detector test to come up.
Yeah, but now what I agree with is the lie detector test can't be conclusive, probably.
No,
what I'm saying is that the viewing is, for the average viewer, is the excitement is whether the lie detector test is right or wrong. But you're 100% right. No, it can't be conclusive evidence.
What I said, Catherine, is that... The people that watch the show, listen, Bell just said that, you know, everyone likes to see a little bit of drama and, you know, the lie detector. But at the end of the day, it's if you watch that show, then I said shame on you for watching it, for keeping it in the up in the ratings for all those years.
Well, if I'd have been on that show, I wouldn't go on it. But if I'd have been on that show, I'd have headbutted Jeremy Carl. I'd have taken the chance of being prosecuted. What would I got? I'd have got £150 fine.
Well, Big Steve would have let you.
He would have jumped.
He would, because the thing is, he couldn't get on. He pushes his face in front of the person so quickly that I'd have just headbutted
You'd
him.
You'd have got your butt in, wouldn't you?
And then I'd have been arrested.
I like that.
I would have, and I'm surprised nobody has done it.
Catherine.
I'm surprised nobody has done it.
Do you think it's more the show, or do you think it's Jeremy Carl? I can see that you've got...
Jeremy Carl. Jeremy Carl, definitely. I know him, actually.
Oh, you know him, right, okay.
Yeah, it's a nasty piece of work.
Right.
And he thinks that, and he was showing off most of the time. He was showing off. I only dipped into it because it came on before Good Morning. And I thought, and sometimes...
This morning, you mean, with Philip and
morning,
Holly,
Yeah, but, and I thought, oh, that's not finished yet. And I could see him pushing his face in, and I thought, oh, get off. You know, I think, get off my television, yes. For God's sake. Mm. I think he's horrible. He's a horrible, horrible man. I don't know what he's going to do, and I don't care.
Catherine, do you know anybody that's been on the show?
No. I know a few. Well, Katie Price's ex has been on it.
Alex Reed,
yeah. Yeah, but he was quite gentle with him because he can't... I didn't watch it, but I heard that he was quite gentle with him because he... probably would have got smacked in the mouth.
Well, yeah.
It says here that other guests say that they were left suicidal after being on the show. David Fox, who was 58, he tried to take his own life after failing a lie detector on the programme in 2014. He's from Weymouth, Dorset. And he says he was telling the truth. I felt like killing myself. I rang up to speak to Graham, you know, Graham.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The help team, but they gave me no help. The show destroyed me. Mm.
Catherine, do you think he'll pop up somewhere else? Do you think this show will get recommissioned somewhere?
I don't think so. I think they've really got to lay the rod down, really. But did you ever see the one in America where the guy surprised him? He was he said he had a crush on him.
Right.
Did you ever see that one?
I did see that one. Did yes,
you?
I did.
Did you?
And he killed him. He killed the guy because he wasn't gay.
Yeah.
And he pretended to have a crush on him, and he was at school with him, at college with him, and he wasn't gay, and he killed him.
Wow. Do you think this is long overdue, then? The
I think so, because it really is trash television. Well, it was popular, but if you look at the people that it was popular with, as you say...
my mum liked it. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right.
My mother would have liked it. Yeah, she would have liked it, because she likes... She used to like people swearing on the television. She's like, "Oh, did you see what he said?"
Yeah.
But I think I just think, you know, they didn't have a tooth between them. Most of the people that were on there, did they?
Agreed. But you're probably right, Catherine. It is a different generation. I think we're changing our times, and it's
There we are, Catherine. Thank you very much for ringing. That's Catherine there over from Westminster.
Listen, she's got a point. She's got a point, and I think we're going along the sort of right. I think we sort of agreed.
Yes.
But I say that the sort of hanging point that you do want us watch is the lie detector test. But I agree with Catherine. It can't be 100% right. Like you just said, you probably would fail it, and even though if you were telling the truth.
Yeah. The thing is, though, Jeremy Cole is going to have everyone's going to come out of the woodwork like Catherine now, who didn't like the show anyway, didn't like him, and they're going to, you know, be saying what she's saying. But the truth of the matter is, it was a big show, top of the ratings, after this.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
A friend of mine, Tyler McCarthy, was at the Spanish Grand Prix last week, and he did post up, I saw it on his Instagram, post up all the cars going past. It is wonderful. To hear racing cars, Formula One racing cars.
Well, go on, do it.
Hang on.
It's a racing car then.
Do you like that? In fact, you've given me your coffee.
Hang on a second. We've got to change coffees. Are you sure?
Yep, you've given me your coffee.
Oh, mine was smaller than yours.
Well, that's what they all say. No, I'm wrong. That's yours. There you go.
There you see, I told you.
Go have a nice coffee while you're doing Formula
One. He's looked at mine. Folks, he's seen I've got a nice big coffee.
Yeah.
And he's still, that's my one.
Yeah.
But he's wrong.
He's wrong.
What did you have today?
Oh, I've got a small coffee. It's not.
It is considerably bigger, mine, isn't it, if you pardon the expression?
It's not very radio, is it? But there you go. Okay, theme tune for Formula One. Yes, brilliant. I love it. It gets me, as soon as I hear it, I want to watch Formula One.
Yes.
And I do, we had this chat about the other day. When you got a Formula One, you want to smell the engines, you want to smell the engine oil, you want to hear the sound.
Yeah.
And there's this... A new story that a return of the Dutch Grand Prix.
Yes.
It's been a long time since there's been a Grand Prix in Holland. We're joined now by Peter Windsor, Formula One journalist. Peter, it's really weird. You sort of, over the years, we've had some of these new exotic places that are doing Grand Prix, but not many ones that have sort of come back to Europe, is there?
No, that's right. We got the French Grand Prix back last year, traffic jams and all.
Yeah.
And now we got the Dutch Grand Prix back, which is kind of nice to have some of these classic races on the calendar. And, you know, yeah, let's have more of them, I say.
What? Where will it be? Where's it going to be? And is it a track that they've modified or...?
Well, it's at the same venue as the previous Dutch Grand Prix, which is a town called Zandvoort, which is right on the coast. It's a bit like Brighton, Blackpool, I guess. It's a sort of seaside summer resort for the Dutch. Oh, yeah. There's a beach within 5 minutes' walk of the track, so you can be on the beach, you can be watching all the scenery, and then go and watch a bit of the Formula One, and then go back to the beach again. So
marvellous, isn't it?
There.
Do you know what? I think I went there on a football tour when I was about 11. Seriously, just as you said, the town, because it's on the beach, and I remember it was cold, windy, and wet. It was awful.
In theory, in summer, of course, it'll be nice. They also occasionally play the Dutch Open Golf there as well. There's a very good PGA golf course there, so it's quite a sporty area.
Yes.
The reason they stopped the Grand Prix there in 85 was, at a time when it wasn't that difficult to put races on wherever you wanted, was because actually the area, the infrastructure is so small for Formula One. They just figured that there was no way it could ever fit in there again with all the big transporters, the motorhomes, everything, all the paraphernalia that comes with a Formula One race.
Yeah.
So my question is how they're going to solve that problem. In the small print of the press release yesterday, they said that they're going to be revising the infrastructure, whatever that means. And the other point that I think it's important to make to all Formula One fans out there is that when we had the race there in 85, it was the what would now be called the old circuit, which had a really nice long straight, a fast corner leading onto it, and lots of overtaking going into the tight turn one Tarzan hairpin. Well, since 85, they've modified Zandvoort for other forms of racing, smaller cars, and they've made the circuit much smaller with a much shorter straight. And even in Formula 3 now, which is a lot slower than Formula 1, they're saying it's almost impossible to overtake. So I just hope that when they do go back to revising the infrastructure, as they say in the small print, that they go back to having a nice long straight again and we go back to the old Zandvoort. I doubt they will, because they want to use all the extra area for their motorhomes and all the stuff they need to be Formula One, in inverted commas.
But surely, this is where we're going wrong. I think where we're going wrong with Formula One. I want to see wider tracks for overtaking. Honestly, I'm watching some of these street circuits and it's lovely. It looks great. Nobody can overtake. And
no, it's ridiculous.
The fact that when I saw this, I thought, are they going to? Which was my first question to you: are they going to modify an older track? You know, that's what I want to see.
I couldn't agree with you more, mate. And you know, I don't know how they're going to do it, because there's not a lot of space at Zandvoort. Which I say the reason they left in 85, which is a long time ago, was because there wasn't enough space. So what they're going to do now, I have no idea. And also getting the public in and out is going to be an issue. I presume they're all going to stay in Amsterdam or something and come by train, because there ain't going to be much space for parking.
Well, if you stay in Amsterdam, you probably won't go to the Formula One. Just stay there tonight.
Oh, that's possible as well, yeah.
Do a bit of window shopping, Peter, couldn't you? Yeah,
I'll leave that to you, Blake. It sounds as if you're up your street, as it were.
You're not wrong.
But just going back, I want to make one point, though. An important point, because you talked about the overtaking.
Yes.
Remember the first race when Lewis Hamilton, this is in Australia, not so long ago, Lewis Hamilton couldn't do anything about it. He blew the start and he was stuck behind his teammate Bottas for the entire race, couldn't overtake, couldn't do anything. And after the race, to me, the logical question to say to Lewis in the first thing he gets out of the car is, Lewis, you must be unbelievably angry because they spent a fortune over the winter trying to make the cars easier for overtaking. They've modified the wings, they've done this, they've done that, and it's no better. You must be very irritated. Instead of which the questioner went up and said something like, oh, well, Lewis, I'm sure you tried as hard as you could, but Valtteri had the day or whatever. And Lewis just kind of exploded and he was very upset. Really? And the reason he's upset is because it is impossible to overtake. And, you know, it's no fun sitting behind another car knowing you're quicker, but you cannot overtake it because the track won't allow you to do so, or the cars won't allow you to do that. And that's the situation we're in most of the time.
Peter, have they done anything? They're so clever at modifying these cars. Is, you know, the old days of sitting in the slipstream and getting the drag and then pulling out to overtake, have they done anything to that to even stop that happening?
Well, no, they're trying to encourage that. They've got a thing called DRS, which is not the cricket one, but the other one where they you can flatten the rear wing if you're very close to another car. You can flatten the rear wing, and in theory, you get more top speed, and therefore you can pass that car under braking. The problem, as you said, is that the circuits today, the straightaways are so short that by the time you flatten the wing, by the time you got yourself together, the corner's coming and you're braking, and it's too, you know, you can't do anything.
Yeah, agree.
And it's to do with circuit design as much as anything else. And you know what? A lot of that goes back to the previous era, the Bernie Ecclestone era, when he encouraged a lot of slow, tight corners because it showed the logos on the cars for longer on television. Yeah, yeah. There's a commercial reason behind it. Can you believe it?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. And, you know, and it's very difficult now for Formula One to get away with that because a lot of our safety infrastructure, to use the word again, is based around all these slow corners and slow circuits, and that's a problem.
So,
you know, we're going to Monaco next week. It's sure it's slow, but it's going to be a procession. I can tell you that now. Whoever's on the pole will win the race.
Of course they will. And that, and this is the whole reason. I used to love watching Formula One, and I almost I look at it and I think whoever gets past the first corner has won the race. It get the cars survive so well now. The tyres survive so well. It's very rare that you get an engine blow.
You should like seeing the car fall apart.
Well, I did. It's true, isn't it? It's true, Peter. That you didn't mind an engine blowing up and oil going everywhere.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Jim Clark winning a race with the rear suspension hanging off the back of the car. You know, the Belgian Grand Prix, four cars running out of fuel on the last lap. You know, that's what it's all about. But we don't have that anymore. We never do, you know.
Do you know what, another thing that I sort of miss, Peter, is the tyre changes. I love the fact that it took, well, I'm going back in the old days, probably 12, 13, 14 seconds. Then it got to sort of like the 7 or 8 second mark. And, you know, it was there was a team around the wheel.
Brilliant.
Now, it's like just under 2 seconds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if you know, but I used to be team manager at Williams. And
did
I
you?
Was there exactly. In, yeah, I was there when we won the championship with Nigel Mansell. And I was team manager that year. And we used to practice our wheel changing on artificial sort of metal hubs in the race shop because we never had a complete car to practice on. And you're absolutely right. You know, we used to practice at around 7.8 seconds, knowing that in the race when the car was hot and the driver perhaps didn't get the stop absolutely perfect, we'd be about 8.5 seconds, and that was a good stop. But it was a very human thing. And we had one mechanic who was really good, who he appeared to be doing everything in slow motion.
Yeah.
And yet he was actually faster than everybody else. His timing was just perfect.
He's relaxed.
And that sort of difference between one human being and another has gone away, as you say, because now the wheel nuts are embedded in the wheel. They just put the wheel on, come straight off again, 2 seconds, blink and you're out.
Yeah.
Now, that would be impressive if one team was doing that and everybody else was doing 8 seconds. But
all
the fun's
gone.
Thing, all,
the fun's,
matter?
All the fun's gone, Peter, isn't it? All the fun. They take the fun away.
They're all doing the same thing. I said to Frank Williams the other day, actually, I said, you know, my old boss, I said, look, Frank, you know, I think they ought to save a fortune by not having these pit stops and let's have a few more errors going on in the pit stop, 8 second pit stop. He said, no, absolute rubbish, Peter. The 2 second pit stop is the hallmark of Formula One. That's what the people pay to come and watch. So we've got to keep it. It's one of the most important things we have.
I think the opposite. But there again, Frank Williams knows a little bit more than I do. Just talking about that time, Peter, when you were at Williams with Mansell, what a great period of racing. You know, you had sort of four main contenders, if you like, sort of battling, didn't you? And it must have been exciting times for you.
Oh, we had Nigel Mansell, Nelson Piquet, Alain Prost, Ayrton Senna. You know, it doesn't get much better. And the cars were relatively comparable, except for the year when we dominated it. But, you know, before that, the cars were pretty even. The tyres were pretty much a standard thing that everybody could drive around. Formula One was brilliant. Yeah, I loved it. And I think I was really lucky to have been around at that time.
Because
today, it's very packaged and very structured. And next year, or in a couple of years' time, they're going to be even more standard parts on the car, which is going to make it even more boring, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If I can just say one other thing, it's a little bit off the wall list, but, you know, we're talking about the Dutch Grand Prix, and that's why there's a bit of news at the moment. I think the owners of the sport, which is Liberty Media, are actually missing a trick here, because the reason it's going to Holland is because we got a big Dutch star, Max Verstappen, and obviously there's a lot of money behind him to put a race on for Max to be racing in front of his home crowd. the upshot of that is that we probably will now not have a Spanish Grand Prix. So six of one, half dozen the other. And that's a really bad thing not to have a race in Spain, because Spain has an incredible motor racing heritage in bikes, MotoGP and Formula One. So we're taking that away from Spain. And I did a proposal to Liberty not so long ago to encourage the owners of the sport to find young drivers from the countries in which we race to try and build up those races. China, Vietnam's coming up, America's an obvious one. We don't have any American drivers in Formula One. And the cost, actually, of doing a proper driver search in America and funding a driver program into Europe to get them into Formula One over, say, a three-year period is much, much, much less than putting on a Grand Prix in America.
Really?
You see my point? And, and yet, they, as soon as they saw, oh, $1 million here, everybody flinched and said, oh, this is never going to happen. We'll leave it to the teams to find the drivers. Well, the problem is the teams will only go for the drivers that have A, talent, and B, a lot of money. And one or the other, But they will never think nationality and just give that guy a chance because he happens to be Vietnamese. It'll never happen in a million years. And it's got to be the sports governing body. And they're missing a trick because they're going to Vietnam, and guess what? We don't have a Vietnamese driver on the Formula One grid, and probably never will.
Probably
and
never.
The race as a result will be good for a year or two and then probably fade away.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, Peter, I really want to have a chat with you. We'll definitely get you back on in a week or two because I want to have a chat with you just about how the cars have changed. You know, in the old days when you could have a different engine and stuff.
But you know what the theme tune should be in Vietnam?
Go on, what?
The Doors.
The Doors, yeah.
Get riders.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
In fact, we've done a theme tune for every different Grand Prix.
Well,
I love
next time we talk, I will have been to Monaco. I'm watching the race there from the top of the top story of the yacht club overlooking the chicane.
I know it.
I'm hosting a party there with Jackie Stewart, actually. So Jackie Stewart for 2 days. So,
are you? I've got quite a few mates. I've got a mate who puts on a yacht there. He puts on every year, and I've got quite a few friends who are going out for it. Yeah. It's one of my favourite places in the world. It should be good. I love it.
Well,
Peter,
I'll see you down at the casino, eh?
Listen, I've been there and I think I was in for 5 minutes and walked out.
Peter, we'll have you back and we'll talk a little bit more about your career because fascinating.
It's fascinating. Yeah. And listen, we'll talk about Monaco because I love Monaco.
Yeah.
Peter Windsor there, Formula One journalist, formerly of Williams as well.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
We're joined by Lee Adams of Cast No Shadow, men's mental health and fundraiser of Calm. And the reason why we're playing a bit of Walk This Way is because he does these walks for to raise funds for mental health. What gave you the idea to do this, Lee?
Hi, lads. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Pleasure.
Thank you. I suffered really bad about 9 years ago. I contemplated taking my own life. I ended up in a psychiatric unit, didn't know where to turn, where to go, what to do. I stumbled across Calm about 5 years ago, and ever since I've been walking, cycling to Fulham away games. We branched out this season, and we brought Crystal Palace fans in.
Brilliant.
Arsenal fans, and we've now got the hashtag walk and talk. It's been absolutely phenomenal. We walked from Palace to Arsenal. Obviously, I'm a Fulham fan.
Yeah.
And subsequently, we had 120 fans walking with us.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. People were talking about their own experiences, their own mental health problems. It was just an absolute eye-opener from me, from what started off as one person walking to Reading overnight for 16 hours to... Yeah. 5 years later to this, it's just been absolutely phenomenal. And I just want to thank everybody for the support and the understanding.
Brilliant. That's fantastic.
Out.
And hopefully, no mobile phones are there. Because
no, that's the whole point.
Yeah, that's it.
You can't be on your phone and walk. You've got other people. And the generic thing is that we're all into football, so you can all talk football. There's always a baseline to talk on something.
Yes.
So there's that. You can't walk around with your mobile phone in your hand and you're going to be hitting cars, lampposts. I've done it before. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So does it help, Lee, with sort of doing these walks and meeting up with other people that have suffered similar sort of mental health problems as yourself?
And the exercise, I suppose, it clears your head.
Oh, it's massive. I love exercise. I'm proper into it. A lot of people, I've got these stepometer on my phone.
Right.
And I'm just going crazy with it. I'm doing 40,000, 50,000, 60,000. And just going at it, just constantly walking. But I generally believe that in doing this, we have achieved so much. It's not, you know, I spearheaded this, but there's a massive group of people that are behind this that equally deserve as much respect as I do. They are the heroes of this, you know, reaching out and understanding that there is a problem. We've got women that walk with us.
Hey, it's just really
phenomenal. We've got kids. We've got everybody that understands everything.
Wow.
And everybody's there for each other. And we just lean on each other and help each other out.
Do you think that this the mental health issues is now become, you know, is becoming more acceptable now? I mean, I was talking to my mum the other day. She's 86, as she says. Yeah. She said, "I had four brothers," she said, "and I wouldn't know. We wouldn't have known what issues they had." You see, so in those days, nobody talked. You know, everyone, it was very Victorian. You know, it was like, you get on with it. You get on with your life, you know. And now I think it's a lot more open and people can talk about their problems.
Oh, massively. When I first started this, Calm was a very, very small charity.
Yeah.
And when I started this, I was literally, I'm not going to lie, lads, laughed at.
Right.
Literally laughed at. People just laughed and, what are you doing that for? That's just stupid. Fast forward 5 years, I've had a lot of problems with people saying, what about black people, what about women? And I went, this ain't about a race or sexual issue.
Yeah,
the biggest killer
not.
Of men under 45 is suicide. Let's get that fact straight. It's not
right.
about black, it's not about white. Then women. And I said, look, the biggest killer of men under 45 is suicide. That's a massive problem, and we've got to address this. It's not I'm going through personal experience.
What do you think is the reason for so many suicides and attempted suicides?
Personally, myself,
yeah.
I can't answer for everybody, but for myself, definitely family breakup. You know, all I ever wanted to do in my life was be a father, be there for my kids, and then obviously when that goes away, it's soul destroying. It's a feeling that you can't go on, you can't do anything, you know, you're fighting for, see your kids, what are you doing? You just wake up every day, go to work, come home. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
Horrible feeling.
Do you think that social media plays a big part in this as well, Lee? Just the fact that everyone's trying to keep up with the Joneses. They look at Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and you think you look at other people's lives and think, oh, they've got a great life, I've got to keep up with that. Do you think that's an extra pressure?
Okay.
I think that is an expression, especially with women. I'm going to say that with women.
Yes.
You know, this is body image. This is the mental health week, and this body image. Obviously, I think girls suffer from that a lot more than blokes.
Yeah.
For me, I think it would affect a hell of a lot of women. You know, I'm basically someone that just gets on with their life, don't cause no drama, and just wants to be an honest, simple guy and make a lot of difference in life.
Yeah.
I want to leave a legacy. I want my boy to understand that, you know, when I go, when I die, Dad was a good lad. He gave his all, and I want him to look up to me and say, well done, Dad. That's literally all I want to do, and help as many people as I can. I've just run out of an operating theatre to talk to you.
Wow.
Really?
We're doing a spinal cord stimulation at the moment.
Really?
So we're putting spinal cords into someone's back, and I've just run out to have a chat with you.
Wow.
That's fantastic. No, it's inspiring what you just said, and I like that. You know, I'm in a similar situation with my son, so I know it's important to, that your kids want to look up to you and stuff.
Yes.
Just changing it slightly, Lee. I don't want to bring you down, but you are a Fulham fan.
We're all on a good run,
and now we're down again. Tell us your thoughts on Fulham. Obviously, it's a bit of a sad season.
Obviously, I can't swear. So,
no, please don't.
Yeah.
No, I can't. But it's been a disappointing season. You know, personally, on a personal level, Tony Khan has helped the charity. The chairman's son, he's donated £7,000.
Oh, so you can't be too nasty about him then.
No,
fantastic.
Well, we talk to each other, and you know, spending £100 million on a new team is. That's some feat to do. Fair play to him. He's done it. He's put his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, no,
if he didn't do it, people would moan that he didn't buy new players. So he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
Yeah.
I just think the players weren't good enough, if I'm honest. Looking forward to next season. I'm on a unicycle to away games next season.
Oh, wow.
So look out for that.
Wow, how long have you been doing unicycle?
Yeah.
I ain't started yet. I've got three months. So if you follow my YouTube channel, Cast No Shadow, Men's Mental Health, you're going to see me falling over making a fool of myself, should we say, trying to get used to it. It's all for a good cause.
It's all for a good cause.
I'm 35 now.
Don't hurt yourself, though. Please.
Yeah. Oh, I always do. I mean, mate. I always do.
I mean, if it don't go well, if the unicycle goes well, you can end up in a circus.
Listen, we can't let you go without just touching on the big news today is that the Jeremy Kyle show has been axed, and of course that dealt with people with issues, obviously had mental issues. What was your take on that show?
To be fair, but when I went through my bad period, when I was off work for quite a bit, it would just be on, and I just didn't understand why you would ever put people like this on the telly.
Right.
You know, these people clearly need help.
Yes.
So instead of putting them on TV, making a mockery of them, and him coming along and just disgracing their name and their character, why do that? I don't get it. You know, we all need help now and again, some more than others. Let's just look at things. Let's be helpful to each other.
I agree with you.
If you could do one good deed in a day, be that helping an old lady across the road with her shopping, do it.
Yeah.
I saw my son a couple of weeks ago do that. He ran off and he helped this lady across the road with her shopping. And I went, you son, I love you. That is just pinnacle. That is, to me, you are.
That means he's going to be a good guy.
Yeah, hopefully with a bit of luck.
Well, I'll tell you what, we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Lee, it's fantastic. You've come on.
No problem, lads. Thanks for having me.
And good luck with the unicycle and everything you're doing. You're doing a great job.
Lee Adams there of Cast No Shadow, men's mental health fundraiser for Calm.
Talking his walks to get men talking.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
We're going to talk a bit of tennis, John.
Okay. I like a bit of tennis.
You like, because you love your tennis. You look forward to Wimbledon?
Yes. I love a bit of tennis, me.
Yeah, it's
I'm not really up with all the players.
But you love tennis.
My sister. Well.
Yeah, because your nephew.
My nephew played for Essex, yeah.
We're joined by Roz Sattar now, Love Sport tennis correspondent. Mm. Roz, Roger Federer's criticised the Italian Open organisers, hasn't he?
He's had a little bit of a pop, hasn't he? Good afternoon, gentlemen,
afternoon.
By the way.
Good afternoon, Russ.
He's had a little bit of a pop. And probably not surprisingly, although this could come back to bite them in the body a little bit, because it's absolutely
in the body.
Pouring down.
I like that, in the body. In the body.
Bite
you in the body. On the bite you in the body.
Basically, they hiked the ticket prices up for his match. And he thought, well, okay, in his typical sort of humble brag kind of way of, okay, well, that's good for them to come see, I suppose. Unfortunately, though, it's all backfired, because I think he was quite early on in the sessions, because they knew they were going to have some horrific weather, and the horrific weather started today. I came running back to watch Conta in action, and it's just been tipping it down in Italy. So there's been no play yet.
What sort of ticket price would it be to see Federer? And obviously, there's more. It's a higher price to see his games than anyone else's.
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head what their ticket prices are, but they do. I mean, it's interesting because the Italian Open is actually it's a great fan tournament. It's an absolute disaster when it comes to media. But it's a great fan tournament.
Well,
fans love it.
Explain what you mean there, Roz.
So basically, all the media, Campo Centrale, which is the big sort of Colosseum bit in the middle, has got like corridors all the way around the outside.
Yeah.
And basically, the press are pocketed in little tiny areas around there.
Oh.
There's no, you don't get a desk. It's just difficult.
Really?
And then you have to like run from there all the way around this stupid curved building to get to where the press conference is and then run all the way back. It's even funnier for the photographers because they've got these teeny tiny doors that are literally the size of Lilliputians that they have to walk through to get all their equipment through, and they bounce back. So I don't know how many photographers lose their equipment, but it is quite entertaining to watch when you're having an espresso.
Give me an example of somewhere that's good for media. What's the best place?
Most of the slams are pretty good for media. I'd say probably Wimbledon is the best.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just so quintessentially British. Like, Britwatch Sports, the site that I run, we're put in a little tiny writing room. It's actually called the International Writing Room.
Wow.
I just love it. And I'd say Stuttgart, where I was the other week. That's a fantastic tournament for media.
Yeah.
But the fans, I mean, I'll be honest with you, boys. When you see Court Pietrangeli and the sunken court with all the statues around, I swear to God, it's the most beautiful thing.
Oh, you painted a lovely picture there, Ross. Paint a lovely picture there, Ross.
Yeah. It is beautiful. Yeah. And they get away with a lot simply because that whole environment is just breathtaking. Oh. They are the most beautiful courts. Wow. Out of everything I've ever seen, apart from maybe Centre Court.
Well, it's a great, great place. I did a gig in Rome last year, and it's just
all right.
Wow,
show off.
It's beautiful.
Show off.
It was in a castle. just tell us before we go, Ros, about Serena Williams. She withdrew through injury.
Yeah.
She was due to play her sister, wasn't she?
She was. And I think this is now the third tournament that she's called out of. She's still planning to play Paris. I still wouldn't count her out.
Right.
But don't forget that she withdrew before that fourth round clash with Maria Sharapova as well last year with an injury. So I hope she does play because I think the tour is better for it.
She holds the record, doesn't she, there in Rome? She's
yes,
won more
she
matches,
does,
hasn't she? Yeah.
I think she's got the most Rome titles, I think. I'd have to check. But it is a shame. I mean, you know, it's always quite a spectacle when two sisters play each other.
Yeah.
Serena on the wane now, would you say?
It's difficult to say. You know, there are so many injuries, one after the other. You know, and with that comes having to sort of rehab and then try and get that match fitness and that match sharpness back.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's now got no other chance until Roland Garros. But if anybody's going to play themselves into form in a Grand Slam, don't forget, it's not like every day like you've got it here. It's every other day. Seven matches every other day.
Well,
if anybody's going to play herself into form, it's Serena Williams.
Yeah. Well, we do like Serena.
We do
it?
Like Serena,
It's a spectacle.
Ros, have a wonderful time. You're there, aren't you?
I'm going next Saturday.
Well, we wish you have a lovely time, and you'll be reporting.
Thank you, darling.
You'll of course be reporting to Love Sport all the time. Yeah, lovely.
Ros Sattar there, Love Sport tennis correspondent. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Joseph Whelan, former X Factor finalist
twice. Yeah,
he's going to be telling us the lowdown, how it was working there.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
Listen, we've been talking about the Jeremy Kyle show and what the Jeremy Kyle show has been scrapped. Mm. It is no longer. And we're talking about various shows, reality shows that people go on and the production team, how they get you doing various bits and pieces behind the scenes. But we've got my old mate on here now who's an absolute class singer and a wonderful musician. Yeah. And he was on X Factor twice and he knows a little bit about this. And we're joined by Joseph Whelan. How are you, Joe?
All right, Bell. How are you, mate?
How are you? Joe,
I've never actually met you, Joe, have I? But I've heard many of the messages that you were...
Certainly, I've heard the stories about you, son.
But I've listened to your...
I won't mention them on here, though.
No, not on here. But I won't mention your messages on here, either.
They are very, do that, mate. No, keep them private.
They're very funny, though. They're very funny.
Listen, he's a wonderful singer, and I've done a few tours with Joe. Obviously, we're talking about X Factor. What was your time like that on there? Because I know that you went on there and you took your son on the show as well. And you know, what happens behind the scenes in shows like that?
I'd say it's a stressful thing going on a show like that because obviously when you're going on there, well, you know yourself singing, on a normal day-to-day show, you're not really nervous or anything, you just do your thing. But when you're going on the show knowing that it's going to be broadcast to millions of people, put the fighters up here a little bit.
Yeah.
And going
in front of Simon Cowell as well. I mean, wow. That's nerve-wracking. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for me, I always remember the first audition I worked on. And I've sang in front of crowds before, never had a problem. And as soon as I walked on the stage, I looked out, I've seen cameras and I've seen the judges sat there. And I thought, well, my voice just dried up straight away because straight away I was thinking, you know, if I trip over on stage or my pants fall down, or I'm going to look like an idiot.
Let me tell you something, Joe. If Bell was behind you, your pants would have come down.
Yeah, I would have pulled it. Well, listen, he does worse jokes than me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Worse has been done than that.
Come down. Joe, you know behind the scenes, when they find you in the auditions and stuff, do they start, you know, I know a few people that they sort of start asking them, have you got a family member that's, you know, it's ill, or, you know, do they stoke the fire a bit?
Yeah, well, I do have like a research team, don't they, that are looking for... You have like interview processes where they're looking to get to know you a bit better and know anything about you that's of use interest-wise. I mean, so the same with me, with my son. Obviously, I knew I had a son. They asked me to bring him along to the audition. And so obviously it made for good telly, you know, in the end. But it was something that I pushed to them. It's kind of, they ask you questions and they know what they're doing, don't they? They know how to make... good TV, they know it's going to come across well, so they will ask the questions and find out the information and get it.
You know, afterwards, Joe, do they, you know, after you've done the show, say, I mean, you went to Sharon's house and you did all that, do they have any sort of aftercare, you know, any producers that sort of give you a bit of advice coming out of the show?
No, not really. Well, personally, not for me. I kind of felt like it was, you know, it was over, that was it. You know, job done. There's your train ticket.
Yeah.
You know, but,
seriously,
yeah.
Is that
but,
how it is?
That's how it works for me. But I never had any, anything negative going on with the show. You know, whereas like, you know, I don't know. I've seen some auditions which were. In fact, I was there. I don't know if you remember the girl who did the Pink audition and she smashed the stage up. I don't know if you remember that one.
Yes, I do.
I was there when that happened, and that was crazy. But I'm not sure. See, someone like that, you'd expect some sort of aftercare, because she looked like she's ready to walk out the building and kill someone.
It's highly likely, madam. Yeah, I mean, no, you're totally right, and that's what we were talking about, whether some of these producers will sort of, you know, give you a bit of aftercare. But, you know, honestly, you got to such a height with it because you was on for 2 years as well. You did it twice, didn't you?
Yeah, with the second time, it's a bit more relaxed, you know. And the production team around the X Factor are great people. They're, you know, the really you get to know them, and they're really helpful. You can pick up the phone to them whenever you want. To be honest, if I did want to pick up the phone to one of the producers about it, because I was getting quite, after being on TV the first time, I'm kind of in at the deep end. I was getting a lot of you know, contact from various people and whatnot. And they give me a bit of advice in what I should do around that. So the support's there if you need it. So I've got to give them the due with that respect. And I think, I mean, like I say myself, I didn't really need too much support, but I think if people did, it would be there. So, but there, it's a big old team that goes on behind what you see on TV. There's a lot going on in the background, and you do get to know them quite well, so you can have that discussion if you need to.
So would you say, Joe, that with something like the Jeremy Kyle show, it's a lot more backstabbing and ruthless and, you know, manipulating?
Well, they probably haven't got the team that X Factor have got, have they?
Well, they probably have.
I don't know. I mean, I know with the X Factor, they're dealing with, I know the applicants are something like 240,000 applicants or something like that, you know, and then when it obviously gets whittled down to smaller numbers, so there's a bigger network of people. But from what I see of the Jeremy Kyle show, it's pretty ruthless. And I imagine as well that they've got no idea what they're going to be subject to talk-wise until they get on there, and then the baffle, and everyone, it doesn't matter who you are, if you've never been on TV before, you sit in front of the cameras, you never be yourself. And you never think as quickly.
Absolutely true.
If you sit at home and someone challenges you with something, you probably come up with a completely different answers when you're on TV.
Of course you would.
And you're gonna kind of, you know, crap it a little bit, in the sense that you're gonna say something you're worried about saying something you shouldn't. Or
well, Joe, I always say that about that Celebrity Big Brother, and I say, oh, you know, I was myself in there. No, you wasn't. You got about 80,000 cameras on you, looking at your every move.
True,
of course, you're not being yourself.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. That was one thing about X Factor that I found comical. Because I'm myself backstage. I'm kind of just chilled out and just did my own thing, and then. You'd see, obviously, hundreds of people waiting around for the audition. As soon as the cameras come swinging past, you'd be just feel fantasy, dancing,
singing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then as soon as the cameras get past, you sit back down waiting again. I'm just like, what's going on here?
Crazy.
Joe, that's what they're there for. So.
Just going on now, obviously, I've done a couple of great tours with you doing the classic.
He's bored me with it, Joe.
But we have some.
Mate, it was not boring by any means, man. You should have been there.
It's a wonderful,
sounds great, a wonderful time.
And obviously, you're doing loads of tours at the moment. You're planning a couple of rock things as well at the moment, aren't you?
Yes, I'm doing quite a bit, to be fair. But at the minute, I'm going to be just focusing on my solo bit at the moment. I'm going to get some new material up, some new music released and put on my YouTube channel and on Spotify and wherever else. So, that's at the minute, I'm going to focus on getting some more of my own solo stuff. I was just come back from Gran Canaria and the Pride over there, which is pretty.
You did Pride. I got just in for Joe's a good looking boy, right? He's a handsome fellow.
I've seen pictures of him,
ripped up to shreds.
Yes.
And he's gone over and done Pride over in so I bet they absolutely
Gran
loved
Canaria.
Him.
Mate, it was brilliant, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
Was
I did it last year as well. Yeah, they got back to this year. But yeah, I just got back from that last week. And looking at going to the States doing it all just with Clovenouf, so but then I'm going to concentrate on my own thing as well. Get some solo music going again, mate.
Brilliant. Oh, just tell us about the cage fighting, Joe, because you do that as well. I know that you put a lot of time and effort into that. Yeah, and you was meant to be having a fight recently, which I was going to come up for.
Yes, mate. 4th of May, I was supposed to fight in Bellator, but I've lost two camps now. I've got injured my ribs, and it's a bit of unforeseen, really. Because I went over to I put 7 weeks into a camp. Went over to Denmark.
Wow.
Took a bad shot, got an injury, tried to train through it for the last 3 weeks. And I got to the point where I was getting close to the fight, needed to make a decision. I couldn't spar.
Yeah.
And so I had to skip it, unfortunately. But shame, really, because I'm only going in the best shape I was in my life for it. But at that level, when you're fighting at pro level, you can't afford to take any chances if you're not 100%, mate. Because I'd rather not fight than get on TV and get smashed up for something that, you know, a pre-existing injury that gets stopped for that, which would be a bit of a shame, really. But I'll be back, mate. I'll stick on the train and
you'll be back,
hopefully see what comes up.
Well, you're too pretty to get smashed. But listen, people, go and look at your Instagram and everything, Joseph Whelan, and your Twitter and your Facebook and stuff, and follow what you're doing. Listen, Joe, I've got to get you back on in the next couple of weeks, and we talk a bit more music and talk a bit more fighting. But it's
good,
wonderful,
mate.
Wherever you're on.
Yeah.
Cheers, Joe. Thanks a lot, mate.
Joseph Whelan there, former X Factor contestant. And
and your mate?
Yeah, listen.
In the shows.
I've had some...
Because you're Brian Adams.
I play Brian Adams in the show.
Yeah.
And he plays Bruce Springsteen. And we do this classic rock USA show. And there's also a John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, I've seen clips of it. It looks great.
It's not lookalikes. It's the story of the three of them and how they intermingle and join each other. It's like Live Aid.
No, I've seen it. It's really good. You've got a good band.
Got a good band that come over from Hungary, and listen, Joe's a great
singer.
Talking
of Hungary, I'm starving.
I bet you are. Listen, we're going to just wrap up today because if you've just joined us, it's only got a few minutes. Jeremy Kyle has been the show has
the
been scrapped does. Today, and we've been debating about it whether it should have been scrapped because it's been on for 16 odd years.
Yeah.
And one suspected suicide, which has sadly happened.
Yeah.
And it's been scrapped. And we talked
about...
We talked about Love Island has only had 148 episodes.
It's amazing that there's only been one.
I think so.
I can't believe it that there's only been one. I mean, you know, that. According to what I've just seen here, there's been quite a few attempted suicides. But that's people coming out now and saying it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a steward's inquiry out on it, I think. Yeah.
I think it's going to run. This story's going to run. We'll probably end up talking a little bit more about this tomorrow. Listen, give us a call tomorrow. Have a little chat with us because we've had a few callers today. 0208 70 2558.
Talk about anything.
But we'll touch a little bit more on the Jeremy Kyle thing tomorrow. Listen, the playoffs tonight.
Yes.
It's Derby and Leeds.
Ooh.
We'll have a little chat.
I'm
you
torn.
Want Leeds to
I'm
win,
torn.
Don't you?
But I do like, I did want Frank, like, I think he's done marvellous at Derby. Would be lovely for him to go up.
Okay, we might get Frank Lampard Senior on the show tomorrow, have a little chat about his son's team. And just to wrap off, the greatest boots, I think,
the wrap off with that,
has been the Copa Mondials.
I'm with you all the way there. I'm sure you're right.
Although, I may get some Puma Kings. See you tomorrow, everyone.
Bell and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.